Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio.
Find out more. Log on to SamaritansPurse.org.
Welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for tuning in today. I am so excited about this hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio, and he's not your ordinary therapist at all. Let me tell you, he's started off as an electrical engineer, and then he went back to school, and I'm not talking electrical engineering school. I'm talking about seminary, and then he went and got his PhD in psychology. So he's got kind of a unique array of disciplines that he funnels together into something pretty interesting. And if you have ever struggled with the thought of just people disapproving of you, and you know what that feels like, and you don't like the fear of not being approved of or rejection, we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about being a passive person and how you need to identify what's going on in your head. And Glenn will help you do that. And we'll find some real tools and strengths to maybe change the way you think today. That's all ahead. And I want to let you know we're going to open up the text line and the phone line, 877-933-2484. Last time Glenn was on, we talked about anxiety. So this is a great follow-up to that discussion we had. And I highly recommend, if you missed Glenn's interview on anxiety, go to the webpage, myfaithradio.com, and just do a search on the website for Dr. Glenn Pickering, and you will find that episode on anxiety. It's powerful, and you will be glad you listened to it. And we're going to follow up today with disapproval and being a passive person. So that's all going to start in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Neil Stavem, manager of Faith Radio. You know, this time of year, there are a lot of things launching. Graduations mean children and grandchildren launching into the workforce. Weddings mean loved ones launching into a family of their own. And sunshine and warmth mean launching the boat and the lake on weekends with family and friends. Well, here at Faith Radio, we're looking forward to launching into even greater ministry in our next financial year starting July 1. But there is a gap in what's been pledged and given so far and our operating budget commitments. We're at 83% of the way to being fully funded, but we need your help by the end of the month to reach our goal. Would you help us get to 85% of the way by the end of this week with your best gift today? A gift of any size by June 30th makes a difference and will help us finish the fiscal year strong and launch us into greater ministry ahead. You can give now at myfaithradio.com or by calling 877-933-2484. Thank you.
All right, let me tell you, passive behavior is driven by your need for the approval of others. I'll say it again. Passive behavior is driven by your need for the approval of others. Rather than risk upsetting them, you kind of put their preferences and needs before yours. In other words, you do not want their disapproval. We're going to talk about that today with Dr. Glenn Pickering, who's in studio. Glenn, welcome back.
Thanks a lot. It's always fun to be here.
Yeah. So do say some more about this passive behavior. Let's build a profile for what that person might look like.
Great. I'm talking about all of you who have ever been in a meeting and who's ever leading the meeting says, hey, does anybody have any ideas about this? And you do. You probably have even a good idea, but you don't say anything. Or somebody's upset with you, and instead of just sort of calmly explaining to them what happened, you kind of lock up and don't say anything. Or maybe you make a mistake and you're really embarrassed and so you don't talk to anybody about it. Or maybe somebody in your life tells you that they really care about you, that you're really special to them, and instead of responding in a way that's fitting for how you actually feel, you sort of shut down or clam up or don't know what to say. And in all of those situations, you're going to walk away later thinking, why didn't I say dot, dot, dot? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I say anything? Why did I say what weird thing ever I did say? And it's important to understand, if you're one of the people and you're in that meeting or you're in that relationship, you're in that conversation, and you can feel yourself lock up. It's important to remember that doesn't have to be the final chapter of that book. Just because that happens to you for a second doesn't mean you have to stay there, and here's what I mean. With all the clients I work with, and that's what I do in my day job, is to help people work on their life and on their relationships, I talk to people a lot about being what I call a second responder, by which I mean we all have our first response, our sort of automatic, often sort of fear-driven response, which is not helpful to us mostly. But if we're willing to just take a deep breath for 2 seconds or 3 seconds, ask God sort of prayerfully to put a better word or better thought or a better sentence on our heart, and then say that, see, we have a way then where we can still be in that conversation, we still share our opinion, or still let people know what we're thinking. So just because you had that initial panic reaction doesn't mean that that has to be the final word for you. I would just ask you, just slow down just long enough where you and God can come up with something that you actually do want to say.
Mm-hmm. So Glenn, could this passive style be something that is just part of how you communicate, where you're always trying to get permission to say things, and you're afraid that they're going to disapprove of your thoughts and opinions, so you're always kind of walking on eggshells a little bit?
Absolutely. And okay. Sometimes people, they get sort of too, I want to say, either or in their thinking about this. So, for example, I was doing counseling once with a young man who was very passive. He had a really hard time speaking out. And so for a couple of sessions, I was teaching him some more sort of simple little assertiveness techniques he could use to kind of get better at speaking up. And it was clear to me after the first 2 sessions or so that he wasn't actually using any of the tools that I gave him. And I asked him, how come? And he said, well, I would never want to be one of those people that blurts everything out and walks all over everybody else and just pushes people around to get their way. And I said to him, luckily for you, that's not your only other option. But see, in his mind, it kind of was. He thought, if I wasn't this way, then that means I have to be this other way.
A little black and white thinking?
Yeah, a little about that, yes. And so, as a sideline, what do people say to me, Glenn? I'm a little bit of a black and white thinker. That's a funny thought.
Yeah.
So part of what all of us who have been too passive, and I am for sure on that list, whether you call yourself codependent or you call yourself a pleaser, doesn't matter. If we're trying to break out of that habit, we need to have a picture in our mind that the opposite of being passive doesn't mean that suddenly you're going to turn into the aggressive bully person who pushes everybody else around. And I always think, I always think all of us, if we're too far to one end of any given continuum, when we first try to change, if we're not careful, we just go to the other end of the continuum. So the person who never speaks up suddenly gets all loud and pushy and starts telling everybody else what to do. It's like, no. See, I always think it's like a pendulum. It takes us a little while to figure out where the middle is. And so the more I can help people see a picture of what the middle looks like, the more helpful it is to them, which I swear to you is why Jesus was always talking in parables. He was trying to help people get a picture of what he's talking about. So if somebody's like been real passive and they're like, well, I don't want to, you know, get off all pushy or anything, I say, here's the thing. If I'm passive, that means you have a voice and I don't. If I go all the way to the other end and I get aggressive, that means I have a voice and you don't. But see, if I'm assertive, that means I have a voice and so do you. So every time I say an opinion, as soon as I'm done saying my opinion, then I say, but what do you think? Or, but I also want to know what you think, of course, or what are your thoughts about that? So people can tell, oh, I'm just saying my opinion. I'm not saying this has to be the decision. This is just my thought, but I want to know your thought as well. And it helps to break out of that thinking that somehow now we have to be all aggressive just to quit being passive.
I got to think about that.
Okay.
But isn't part of what we should do as children of God to let people see the real us and
right.
hear what we have to say?
Right.
And that's a good thing, right?
It is a good thing, as long as we understand, and God would want the same thing for them. So that's why
exactly.
I say, so if I'm trying to be assertive, that means I'm very willing to share my opinion as a child of God, who is sacred and of worth, and then I want to make sure I give the other person exactly that same opportunity to share their opinion because they're also a child of God and of worth.
How do we suspend our history with each other, though, to be hearing what the person is saying? Because doesn't our brain start filling in blanks really fast?
Oh, my gosh. Especially if it's a relationship we've been in for quite some time and we think we know what they think.
Yeah.
We can almost start having what I call a virtual conversation where I have the whole conversation in my head because I'm thinking I know what they're going to think.
Right, right. So we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, Glenn, but do say a word about passive-aggressive. How does that fit in?
Well, what I think is they're actually the same thing, because if I'm passive, then I don't say anything, and I don't say anything, and I don't say anything, and finally, after way too long a time, it all kind of erupts and all comes out at the same time, and I get aggressive. And people would look at you like, what the heck just happened there? And I used to work with guys who had a problem with quote-unquote anger, and I saw the same thing, that, yeah, they would get aggressive occasionally, but it's because they're passive the 117 times before that, and it all builds up, and then when it finally comes out like, oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Way too harsh.
Yeah. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. We're absolutely open to taking your call or your text question. Let us know what it is. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio, and we're talking about overcoming fear and passivity. If you're a passive person, you might have some communication style and some habits that maybe have dug pretty deep ruts, and it's hard to take a new step and start a new path and get on a new direction. Glenn, I would imagine that's going to be a tough first step.
It can be. So people often say, well, Glenn, there's one person in my life I can never speak up with. They always talk over me. How can I start speaking up with them? And I say to them, we're not going to start with having you speak up to them. Why would I have somebody start with the hardest place? Hey, Glenn, I've never jumped on a trampoline. Okay, well, let's have you start off with a triple twist when you jump 4 feet, 14 feet in the air and land, now hopefully not on your head. No, we're not going to start with that. Right? Mm-hmm. We're going to start with the really simple things. And so if somebody has been passive and they're like, Glenn, I want to start to find my own voice. I want to learn how to speak up. I'm going to say to them, great. Who's the safest person you could possibly start with? Who's the person who's always asking you, what do you really think? Who's the one who keeps saying, no, I really want to know what you're thinking? Who's the one who you would feel safest with? And I'm going to ask that you start with them, and I'm going to ask that you tell them that you're going to, because it's not fair to have somebody be a guinea pig in my experiment when they don't know they're in the experiment. I don't think that's quite right. So I'm going to ask them, hey, I'm going to start trying to speak up more. I'm going to have answer more of your questions when you ask me what I really think. So I just kind of want you to know that ahead of time. And they're going to say, oh, okay, great. And they're probably going to think to themselves, it's about time. And I'm going to start with that one or two people so I practice that skill. Because the skill is the same. The skill is going to be the same with that person as it is with the most difficult people in my life. So if I can learn this skill, well, I don't also have to deal with all the other baggage at the same time, so I can just focus on learning the skill, then it's super helpful. And then we're going to take that to other places.
Mm.
So I'm always going to think, who's your safest person? And they're like, no, there's people in my family I really need to learn how to speak up to. And I think, yep, and we will work our way up to that.
Okay. So if I think back to approval seeking and how that is designed in a way, you're trying to place value on the needs of others.
Mm-hmm.
I know that to some degree is a good thing, right?
Well, here's the problem. See, if people actually were doing that, they're just trying to please other people, then that would actually be one thing. But see, they're not actually trying to win those people's approval. They're just trying to avoid their disapproval, which is not the same. Because let's say I don't want you to disapprove of whatever I'm doing. You know what the surest way is for me not to be disapproved by you is to do nothing. And now I'm the guy who's given one talent, who got scared, didn't use it, buried it. And it's really, really instructive to notice, and Jesus, in telling this story, says, and the master was furious. It's one of the few places in the scriptures where we see the picture of God in that way, that God was literally furious as Jesus tells that story. So we need to know this thing we do where we don't speak up, don't say the words God put in our heart, don't do the things that we're called to do out of fear, that this is serious. This is not, oh, it's not that big a deal. No, it's a really big deal. And we can't let that stand. We have to find our voice.
Mm-hmm. So if I try to get to know you, Glenn, and I try to get to know what you want, is there a chance that I might be more confident in myself and trust myself more and be less passive-aggressive?
Say more about that. I might understand that question, but I'm not sure.
You talk about life's most dangerous question is what do you want?
What do you want?
Yeah. So if I'm if I'm tiptoeing around you, maybe because I'm fearing your disapproval,
right?
What am I so afraid of you disapproving of?
Here's a really interesting question. Nothing. It's like, you know, when I was a little kid, I'd be shooting hoops in my backyard, you know, and I'd be pretending there was a big crowd cheering, and there's 10 seconds left, Glenn has the ball, 9, 8, the crowd's going crazy. But see, even back then, when I was a little kid, I knew the crowd wasn't actually real, right? At least pretty much I didn't. Mm-hmm. But see, we go through life afraid of disapproval. It's like there's this big crowd watching us, and we're so afraid, except I saw a sign in a friend of mine's office once a long time ago. I said, those of you who are always worried about what the rest of us think about you would be surprised to find how rarely we did. Because they are their own life, you know what I mean? So we go around thinking, I don't want people to be upset with me. I don't want people to be mad at me. But see, A, they're not. And B, they're real busy living their own life. And so we literally mostly just make that up in our head.
Mm-hmm. So let me try to elaborate on my point, which is kind of flimsy. It was not a solid point. But let's say I get to know you a little bit better and I find out you like roast beef and horsey sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So I can say, hey, Glenn, how about we go to Arby's? And you go, great, because I've gotten to know you. So I don't have to be passive. Like, I don't want to upset you, but I would like to go where you'd like to go.
Right. Now, which is perfectly great. So if you're just trying to get to know me, trying to be nice to me, and you suggest that, that's great. Here's the flip side. But if I say the next day, hey, Bill, it's time to go out to lunch. Where do you want to go? And now I get this weird, weak little answer. Oh, I don't know. I don't care. Whatever you want, Glenn.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Now we get to the place where suddenly that's not a very helpful trait. So is it good to care about others? Absolutely. Is it paralyzing to worry so much about being disapproved by others that I myself never actually show up? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if I have a passive personality, Glenn, would I say things like, oh, could I be more pathetic? Or, I'm so stupid, I can't believe I did that. I don't know why I'm talking with a Valley Girl accent all of a sudden.
I've always kind of thought of you that way.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, is that something a passive person might do?
You know, it's interesting how critical we can be of ourselves. And sometimes people say, well, Glenn, I'm my own worst critic. And I think they expect me to kind of pat them on the back for that or something. And I say to them, you know, that's satanic, right?
What?
Yeah, exactly. And then I leave because I want them to have to think about that on their own. No, I think when I make a mistake, see, God is real big on us learning and growing and becoming a better and better version of ourselves. So if I make a mistake, God wants me to notice I made a mistake and think to myself, okay, how could I do that better next time? That's a holy question. That's a sacred question. How could I do that better next time? That's a godly question. But see, if I make a mistake, and I'm just filled with self-talk. Glenn, that's so stupid. You're so dumb. You'll never get it right. Blah, blah, blah. I not only don't figure out a better way to do that next time, I don't even ask myself that question. Which means now next time that's going to come up, I still haven't even given any thought to how I could do it differently. So guess how I do it next time. Same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm stuck in this loop, which doesn't make my life any better. I get stuck in this really bad place, and I'm not growing and learning, which God would want me to do. Well, call it what you want. I call it satanic. It's a way of keeping us from doing what God would want us to be doing.
Mm-hmm. This is a tricky one, Glenn.
Yeah.
This passive stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Because I think we all see a little bit of passivity in all of us.
Oh, sure.
Because we want to please to some degree. We want to put other people's needs ahead of ours to some degree.
See, right, that's the thing we have to be careful about. Sometimes, remember, I said to you a long time ago that some people say, Glenn, I'm a pleaser. And I say, oh, if only that was true. And they look at me like I'm being mean to them, which hopefully I'm not actually. But see, if I'm actually a pleaser, then I'm thinking about you, I care about you, I want to do something that's helpful to you, pleasing to you. But see, what a pleaser really means is I would be totally focused on your needs, but a pleaser, somebody says they're a pleaser, really means I don't want anybody to be displeased with me. See, it's actually totally self-centered.
Mm.
That's why it's so limiting. That's why the master is furious, because we are so centered on ourselves or how we look to others or how we're doing in the eyes of others or whether other people approve of us, that it literally keeps us from living the life or using the gifts that God gave us, which is why the master is furious in that story. So being kind to others, actually being good to others, is great. That's different than being so fearful of what others think of me that I don't do any of the things I know I'm called to do because I don't want them to be upset with me. One is totally, truly other-centered in a godly sort of way. One is totally focused on my own self in a very ungodly way.
So if we're in relationship with whoever it is, we're wanting them to see that the real you, and they want, I mean, they've chosen to be working with you or in a friendship with you or in a relationship with you. So that they do that because they like you. So you don't always have to be so incredibly tiptoeing around everything, right?
That's what I think. I talk to people a lot about you can choose to be loved, you can choose to be approved of, but you can't have them both.
Say that again.
You can choose to be loved, or you can choose to be approved of, but you can't have them both. Because if I want everybody's approval, then I have to go around wearing a certain mask, always being the person everybody else wants me to be, so nobody actually knows who I actually am. And when they tell me they like me, instead of making me feel better, I think, yeah, but you know the real me. Well, see, if I actually want people to love me, I have to let my real self show up, and I have to let them make up their own mind about whether they like me or not. See, when I'm seeking approval, I'm actually very manipulative. I'm trying to manipulate people into liking me. But see, the people who love me can only love me if they know the real me, which means I have to drop all the crap and actually let my real self show up and let them make up their own mind whether they love that guy or not. And sadly, occasionally, once in a while, people don't.
How many people, what percentage of people engage in that kind of thinking? Because I have a feeling a lot of people are doing this.
Right. I think it's so easy and it's so ungodly. Like, Jesus said the whole crux of all of the Bible was love your God with all your heart, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, some people think he said love God and love your neighbor instead of yourself, but that's not what it says. That means I should be in relationships where I care deeply about other people and I let them care deeply about me so we take good care of each other. Whereas if I'm always taking care of everybody else, but when somebody asks me what I need or how I'm doing, I just say, oh, I'm fine. I don't need anything. Glenn, where do you want to go out to eat? I don't care. Whatever's okay with you guys. Well, see, I'm not letting them love the real me because the real me is not showing up. And so we will have eventually a very one-sided relationship. And I'll be bitter and resentful and tell people, oh, everybody else in life is a user. I think, well, because I don't let them give to me.
Mm. All right. I want to invite all of our listeners to call or text in with any questions you would have. When I come back from break, Glenn, I want to ask you about the nonverbal style of a passive person.
Right.
Do they have nonverbal characteristics? Do they have difficulty with eye contact? Do they keep their body posture a certain way? I'm real curious about this whole passive profile. I'm talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering. He's in studio. Again, the number is 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. That could be a call-in question or a text. We can keep your name anonymous if you like. That's no problem. We'll take a very short break and be back with more Dr. Glenn Pickering in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. And Glenn, I want to talk about posture and nonverbal stuff, but I also want to try to get behind the thinking that would drive a passive sort of mentality and passive behavior.
I love talking about that, and here's how come. I was raised to be very nice, and so I thought the opposite of nice was mean. But I've come to understand from a biblical perspective that the opposite of nice is actually good. And here's what I mean. We think about what it means to be nice from a worldly perspective, especially if you're Minnesota nice, although I hear they're kind of nice in Iowa, but not as nice.
They're very nice in Iowa. Super nice in North Dakota. I was just there Friday.
I know somebody lives there, and I wouldn't say they were that nice. All right. But all right, so, okay, she's in studio, but that's okay. Now, so, here's the thing. I can be nice is just a whole list of things I won't do. I don't be sarcastic. I don't cut in line. I don't burp in church. There's a whole list of things I don't do. So if somebody says this person is really, really nice, that means there's a whole list of things they won't do.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I can literally then be nice by doing nothing. And back to the guy with the one talent, made the master furious.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the gospel at all, like not just those little snippets we often get in church, but, you know, blocks of the gospel, what you'll notice is that Jesus is never nice. He's clearly not from Minnesota. So he's bold, he's challenging, he's miraculous, he's loving, he's healing, he's all kinds of things, but he's never nice. And here's what I've come to understand. Nice is just a whole list of things we won't do. Goodness is a positive, powerful force in its own right. It's the desire to make a difference in the lives of the people around us. So I've come to understand, by dropping nice, it doesn't mean I have to be mean. It means I actually get to choose good. Well, I'm actively working to bring about the good in the lives of the people around me. So you read any scripture story with Jesus in it. See, he's always trying to make a difference in the lives of people around him. He teaches them, heals them, preaches to them, role models for them, tells them parables because he's trying to make their life better. So all of you out there who think, oh, God, but Glenn, I'm just trying to be nice. I want you to hear this as gently but as clearly as you can. I'm going to ask that you quit doing that. That is an incredibly limiting thought, that your goal in life should be to be nice, because you can be nice and literally do nothing. And that's a really, really low bar. That's like saying, Glenn, I want to go all the way to the end of my life and not make any mistakes. I want something better for you than that. God wants something way, way better for you than that. God wants you to live a life that makes a difference. And he's given you gifts and talents and experiences so that you can. So I would just like you to give yourself permission to quit being nice, not because now you're going to turn into a jerk, but because now you can actually start making a difference in the lives of the people around you. And I want you to just ask yourself, what are my gifts? And if I was going to start using them in a way more intentional way, what would that look like? And I challenge you to do that.
All right, nice is a big word. Mm. And I'm not saying we've beat it up a little bit today, but I think we've taken some shots at it.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing, right? I mean, Jesus is all loving, all powerful, all bold, all intense. And I guess, I never thought about him as being nice.
No, he's not.
Well, I mean, I think you'd have some people arguing that he was, but,
But
that's fine.
It is. Because, I don't mind if other people are wrong. I can't help that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that wasn't very nice. But I'm just thinking, we just need to drop, as Christians, I hear so many people thinking that's the goal. And I just want to say, no, God has a way higher goal for you than that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's bad, really. It's just that it's nothing. And God has something way better than nothing for you. So, for example, at the next meeting you're at and you have an idea to share and you can feel that impulse to withdraw or to shut down, I want you to give yourself 3 or 4 seconds. Ask God to give you the courage to speak up, and I want you to speak just as clearly and as gently as you possibly can about that great idea that you have. Next time somebody says, hey, where would you go out to eat? Want to go out to eat? And you can just hear yourself getting ready to say, oh, I don't care, anything's fine. Why you just stop for a few seconds and think, no, really, they really want to know. What do I want? What does sound fun to me? And give yourself just those 2 or 3 or 4 seconds to ask yourself that question and then speak. Not because I want you to quit, start being a jerk, but because I want you to start being good. I want you to show up.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of stuck on this idea, Glenn, that there's people with a nice checklist, and they say, in order to be nice, I can't do this and this and this and this.
Right.
And the net result is you could be doing nothing.
Right. Yes.
That's kind of a scary thought.
It is a scary thought. Nowadays, when somebody says, oh, my daughter's dating this really nice boy, I say, boy, I hope that's not true. Because I just think there are so many nice men out there, especially, and I think, and this happens in my counseling office all the time, I can't tell you how frustrated their wives are with them. Because here's what I know. If you give every woman sodium pentothal, so she has to tell the truth, she would say, I would like a man in my life who I know is strong enough to protect me. Well, she looked at the guy, and he's not strong enough to protect her. He can't even speak up for his own self because he's too busy being nice. It's not going to make her feel safe or cared for or protected in that relationship. And she's going to start treating him in sort of subtly disrespectful ways that will also then contribute to how badly that relationship starts going.
Are people quietly suffering through all this?
Yes. And oftentimes without understanding what's wrong exactly.
Mm. So if we get back to what do you want, what if you've assumed what you want doesn't matter or won't happen, so what's the point?
Right. This is why Jesus says in Matthew 7, ask and it shall be given unto you, knock on the door shall be opened unto you. To all of those of you who think, oh, other people can get what they want, but I can't. Other people can do live the life they want, but I can't. Jesus wants to say to you loudly, clearly, gently, but incredibly boldly, that's a lie. Ask me for what you want. Be bold. Be brave. If you need the courage to ask, then ask me for the courage to ask. That's okay, too. But don't tell yourself you can't have it, because the Bible is really, really, really clear about this. You can have what you want. Ask God for what you want, and God will literally start working to bring that to you.
Mm-hmm. That sounds just like what God would want for his kids.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, don't earthly parents pretty much say that to their
kids?
That's
what I think, too, because otherwise, what are we saying? Well, if my kid has something, I hope they sure don't talk to me about it. But what the heck?
Yeah, if my kid's got a dream he wants to do, I sure hope he doesn't pursue it.
I know, or worse yet, come to me to talk about it or expect help, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think, what would you want as a parent? You'd for sure want your kid to come to you.
Mm-hmm. What, Glenn, what if there's so much fear-based issues? There's a ball of fear in a relationship,
right,
or in a work environment where people are just too afraid. How do you navigate your way around that?
Let's do one of those at a time.
Okay.
Let's say I'm in a relationship where there's all that fear. It's entirely possible and very, very likely that the other person is just as fearful. So I need to understand, if I'm fearful about bringing stuff up, they're probably just as fearful.
How would you say that to the person?
Here's the cool thing. If I really believe that, and I can promise any of you, if you're in that spot, this is true, the other one's just as afraid as you are, then you can come to them and say very gently, hey, hon, there's this pattern we get into, not you, it's not a blaming thing. There's a pattern we get into where we don't really sort of say what we're thinking, and I would like us to find a better way to do that. Very, very gently invite them with you into looking for a better way.
All right. If you have a history of it instantly going into argument,
right,
instantly going into people's blood pressure going way up,
yep,
how do you regulate that?
So, you mean instead of a relationship where people are too quiet, people get like really loud right away?
Yeah, exactly.
I would take a very similar approach, but I would really, really want to almost go over the top with it. When Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. He was trying to say, there's a problem in a relationship with you or your brother or sister. Then even though it's 50-50, you need to start looking at your own self. Because mostly people stop the quote right there, but the rest of the quote is, and then when you've taken the log out of your own eye, you can talk to your brother or sister about the log in their eye. So it is 50-50. We just need to start with ourselves. So let's say it's the same thing, except now instead of not talking, we talk too loud all the time. It gets so intense. I'm going to sort of say the same thing to the other person. Hey, hon, I know we have these icky arguments that go bad so fast, and I totally get that that's partly on me. So I'm not saying it's your fault. I totally get it's a pattern me and you get into, and I would really like us to find a better way to do that.
Mm-hmm. If you're a passive person, Glenn, how much discomfort do you live with on a daily basis?
Well, you live with a lot, because every single conversation you walk away from, you feel bad about yourself. You didn't speak up. And every time anybody asks your opinion, you're in discomfort because there's this war inside yourself about not wanting to say what you're really thinking, because you want to be nice, or you don't want to be wrong, or you don't want to get criticized, or you don't want people to be mad at you, or you don't want to make a mistake. Jesus said, the truth shall set you free, and he wasn't kidding. So if we're willing to just take those 3 or 4 seconds and then just tell our truth, there's a freedom that comes with that. Freedom from that anxiety, freedom from that turmoil that you're talking about. Like, oh my goodness, this is how it's supposed to feel.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm hearing this and thinking, I might be a passive person.
Mm-hmm.
Is the solution to be an assertive person, or is there some place in between that the pendulum stops in the middle?
It's important to understand that assertive is the middle.
Okay.
And mostly people get that mixed up.
What's at the other extreme?
The other extreme is like just being aggressive. So if I go from being passive, where I don't, like I said before, I don't have a voice, but you do. If I'm not careful, I go all the way to the other extreme where I have a voice and you don't, and now I boss you around instead. So I just go from being the doormat to being the dictator. It's like, well, neither one of those are helpful. In the middle is a place where I have an opinion, and so do you. We both matter, and only after we both say what we're thinking will we make a decision about what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. So if a relationship, a couple has been feeling detached from each other, mm-hmm. and they try to come to this place where they say we have a pattern
right.
of retreating into our corners,
right.
And there's some, they've developed these habits of these physical proximity where they're kind of, he goes out into the garage where he's got his little man cave and,
right.
and she goes up in the bedroom and they stay apart. How do we start finding a safe arena where you can go find a place where it's safe to talk?
That's a really good question. Clearly, you should go talk to Glenn Pickering, I think.
I should.
Yeah,
that's with two N's, GlennPickering.com.
Yeah, when we come back from break, let's talk more about that. I think that'd be really great.
Awesome. We'll take a little break. If you have a question, let us know what it is. 877-933-2484. You can call and ask Glenn specifically with your very own voice, or you can send me a text, and I'll ask it on your behalf. Or you can also go to bill@myfaithradio.com, and I can ask that question for you. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. His website is Glenn Pickering. That's two N's, GlennPickering.com. He's got a great offer about midway down the page for a free 20-minute consultation. So, you know, we were just talking during the break about if you have a little bit of a passive personality and maybe you're reluctant to want to even call because you might fear that your question might, be stupid or... you know, that we might disapprove. We're never going to disapprove because we love you. So feel free to send a text or a call if you like. We'd love to hear one of your concerns or questions. If you feel like you're passive and you don't want to be, or you've got an issue regarding being in a relationship with someone who's extremely passive, we'd love to hear that. So Glenn, where do we go from here?
Well, so we talked before break about what if you're a couple that has gone this process where you've drifted further and further apart.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I think in any marriage, one of two things are happening. We're either growing closer and closer together, or we are drifting further and further apart at any given time. One of those two things are happening. So if you're a couple who's drifted quite a ways apart, and you're thinking, okay, how can we get that ship moving in the right direction? It's important to remember that the answer to that question is gradually, which is just how you got here in the first place. I think to myself all the time these days that everything God has ever created, you know, grass, birds, trees, us, even the earth itself, honestly, has two things in common, which is that it's always changing gradually. So if I look at my marriage and think, well, this needs to be way different, it's important to understand if we get help, if we're willing to work on it, it's going to get better gradually. Which is part of why when you said before about what if you're in a relationship where you don't know how to speak up. And I said, find the safest person, start with them. Same thing. How am I going to get better at speaking up? Gradually. I'm going to find the safest place. I'm going to get better at it with that person. I'm going to gradually start doing that with other people. If you're a couple that hasn't spent a lot of time together and you're willing to think, hey, let's start doing this differently, I'm going to have you start by spending 12 minutes a day one time just talking about how your day went with a little bit of structure on it. Like, what was the best part of your day and how come that was so good? What was the hardest part of your day and how come that was so hard? We get to ask questions, but not be controlling or judgmental, but just listen and have you just practice being with each other in a way that feels safe, like, oh, this was nice. Then I'm going to have you start going on a date once a week just to have fun together to remember, oh, that's right. I have fun being with you. That's actually really nice. And we're just going to find a way to just sort of gradually build that thing back up in a good direction because just like you drifted apart gradually, we're going to build it back up the same way because that's how everything that God does works.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I could just revisit a question I asked before the break, and we were talking about living a detached sort of relationship.
Yep.
Two different zones in the house.
Right.
Is there a recommendation you could offer for finding a safe arena where when you step into that arena, you're not going to get your head bit off?
Like, say a little bit more about that, just to make sure I understand the question.
Well, if let's say the husband has detached into his man cave in the garage, and the wife comes out with some, you know, something that's upsetting her, is that a place where they're going to have a meaningful discussion, or is there a place where you say, "I didn't know you were upset. Let's go for a walk." And find a place that's just not traditional. I don't know what I'm trying to ask, Glenn. I think
it's a great question.
I think if the arena's not safe, who wants to go into that arena?
Right. Because we have certain associations. Like, let's say me and you always argue when we're in the kitchen. Okay.
Yeah.
And now I have something to talk to you about, and you're standing in the kitchen.
Right.
Well, we have a history of those conversations going badly. So you're right. If we said, hey, let's go sit on the couch and have a moment and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go for a walk. Let's go outside. Let's do something else. Like, so it's not in a place where we usually argue. It's probably a great idea because we are affected in ways we hardly even understand about literally just the place where we're in. So, if I have bad associations with that place, great. Do it somewhere else.
So, I mean, the way in which something is brought up is very meaningful, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes.
So if you storm into the kitchen where we normally have arguments and you're in the kitchen and you lay into something, there's going to be trouble.
Right. It has to go badly. That's part of why when I was coaching people just a minute ago about, well, how do I talk to my partner if it's going badly? I say, hey, I notice we're doing this badly. We both really struggle. I would like both of us to find a better way to do that. Because so often, if we come in really harsh, like you're just talking about, we come with a clear attitude of me against you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to prove that I'm right about this. I'm going to prove that you're wrong about this. And the other person gets defensive because they can literally feel like they just got kicked off the team. Like, I'm not coming in to talk to them because I want to be on the team with them. I'm coming into them with a real me against you agenda,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, gets them all defensive. If I'm going to have any sort of constructive conversation with that other person, it has to be clear to them. I'm trying to have a me and you conversation. I care about me. I care about you. I want it to be better for us. And that's why I'm talking to you. And in fact, if I don't have that attitude, I don't really have the right to talk to them at all.
Mm-hmm. Talk, Glenn, a little bit about tone, because I think when it comes to speaking your feelings and your truth,
right.
You can be horribly off the rails just with your tone and your body posture and everything else.
Right. Yes. You've heard me talk a million times about how everything goes think, feel, do. You know, my thinkings drive my feelings and my feelings drive my behavior. So when people say, well, Glenn, what's the right words to say? Or kind of what's the right attitude to take? What's the right? And I think, you see, you have to start with your thinking. That's what I meant just a second ago about me against you or me and you. If I go into an hour conversation, I'm thinking, I'm going to prove my point. I'm going to show you're wrong. I'm going to prove I'm right. And that's my thinking, then my tone is going to be harsh or condescending or attacking. Then they're going to feel that. And the words I use are going to be harsh. Like, you always, you never, why don't you? So if I want to change my words and or my emotions or the tone that goes with those words, I really have to start first with how I'm thinking. I have to have my thinking clear. I really want to get this right with my honey. I really want to find a better way to do this. I really, really want us to find a better way. I want us to be more connected. And if I have to spend some time in prayer to get my mind right, well, then okay. That would be a real good use of my time.
Mm-hmm. A listener that said, what can I do if I feel like I'm always talking about myself and want to break the habit?
Mm. It just sort of depends. If you feel like you do that everywhere, or in just in a specific relationship, but let's say a person sort of notices that that's kind of what they do everywhere. Remember that assertive means I say what I'm thinking, but then I ask you what you're thinking. So if I want to break the habit of just talking about myself, I might start the conversation the same place, just tell a little story about myself. But then as soon as I'm done with my story, I'm going to say, so what's up with you? Or what's new with you? Or has anything like that ever happened to you? Or what would you do if you were in that situation? So mm-hmm. I'm literally consciously handing the conversation to them after I finish telling my little story or talking about my little point that I was trying to make. It's just about being conscious about when it's time to turn the conversation over to the other person. So it's fine to start off talking about yourself. You just don't want to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. So what if you get in the habit of sort of taking your thoughts and you kind of devalue them over the course of the conversation or... because you're so busy seeking approval that you're changing your story as you go to try to get the best outcome.
Right. And I want to say so gently but so clearly to people, you will not get the best outcome. Even taking that approach that you want to get their approval, and so you keep trying to changing your what you say or how you act or your opinion in the conversation to get approval, that's not what you're going to get. What you're going to get from the other person is confusion or dislike or condescension or like, I don't know what. But they're going to walk away shaking their heads thinking, I don't know what that was. So, A, approval is not what you're going to get. And even if you did get their approval, that still means you just sold your soul out to get approval. And I just think, well, that's a bad bargain.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to make approval the boogeyman, Glenn, because it's not, is it?
Well, see, people say to me, Glenn, I need people's approval. And I just want to so gently say to them, no, you don't. You need people in your life that love you. That part's true. You need people who care about you. You need people that you care about. But as soon as I think it's about approval, because approval involves judgment. And the Bible says in Christ, there's no condemnation in Christ. There's no judgment. So, and Paul even says, why do you judge your brother when you yourself are making the same mistake? So approval is just about wanting somebody to have a good judgment about me. But see, I want to have relationships that are about something better than judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know me, you like me, you care about me. Whether you agree with me or not all the time doesn't even matter to you because you just care about me as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if that's not my goal, then I'm going to end up with real shallow relationships that I find very unsatisfying.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, we just want God's approval, right?
Right.
And do we confuse the two when we're looking for human approval?
Well, see, here's the thing. We can't even search for God's approval. My pastor at my church gave this great two-part sermon a few weeks ago, and he talked about the prodigal son story. And he said the moral of the story with the young son that there's nothing you can do to make God love you less.
Mm-hmm.
And the moral of the story of the older son is there's also nothing you can do to make God love you more. God loves you. That's already done.
Yeah.
So I think somewhere we need God's love or approval. It's like, you don't get it. You already have that.
Why are we scampering for other people's approval then? Because that's just part of the fall?
Because we believe the lie that there's something wrong with us. And if we could just get enough people to pat us on the back, we'd finally feel okay. And I think, no, that's not the solution. Because even if I seek people's approval and get a bunch of people to pat me on the back and tell me I'm okay. See, I know that they just fell for my fake self. So it doesn't. I do that to make myself feel better, but it doesn't make me feel any better. It just makes me feel like, oh, you guys fell for it. The only thing that actually makes me feel better is to know that God loves me as I am, which I need to be in my prayer time to find that out, and that got people in my life love me as I am, which means I have to let them see the real me, which I get that scary because some people won't like the real me.
That's called reality?
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah, I hate that word.
Right. So if I want people to love me, then some of them will and some of them won't.
Mm-hmm.
If I think everybody needs to approve of me, it's like, okay, but that's all I'm ever going to get. And I'm going to get the same thing from everybody everywhere I go. And it's going to mean to me, in the end, nothing.
Yeah. So in conclusion, don't focus on being nice. Focus on being good.
Exactly right. Thank you, my friend.
Yes. And speak your truth and know that people love you for who you are.
Right.
And they want to know what you think
right.
and who you are, and God loves you, and that you are in a safe space all the time.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Glenn Pickering has been my guest. Head over to his website at Glenn Pickering. That's two N's, GlennPickering, if you want to learn more about him. He also offers a pretty nifty 20-minute consultation, which is complimentary, and it's about midway down the page. You can just fill out the request form and he'll contact you. That's a pretty good deal. Glenn, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. That wraps up our hour with Glenn, and it's been a fast one, and I appreciate you did not head towards the door that had that emergency. the alarm will sound if you go through this door. I saw you looking at it a couple times. You just never used it. All right. We'll be back with hour two just around the corner. We're going to be talking to Greg and Lynn McDonald. They're authors of the book Embracing the Journey. Be back in a little bit. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.